Okay, so last week we said that the only way we can defeat Amalek is not through a direct hit. That if we try to do it directly, we're going to miss. We're going to mess up. And it has to be done indirectly. There's no direct war against the people of Amalek. There's nothing we can do then. But by learning Torah, we have the ability to defeat them in a different fashion. We have the ability to go up against them in a different way. There are three aspects to learning Torah that have the ability to defeat Amalek in that fashion. The first aspect is something we all understand and we all know, and that's us learning. We spoke a little bit about that last time, our personal learning, adding on more and more to our allotted times, the times that we have, a little bit of extra things that we have over here. Obviously, making sure you're finding the best time daily to be able to work on your Gemara, your Chumash, your Musar, Halacha, etc. Right, that's an obvious one. And that's the first way that we can defeat Amalek by concentrating on what we can do, what's in our hands to do to be able to learn. But there's more to it than just that. The learning in and of itself is one aspect to it. The second aspect is to be able to help others become better people. Meaning, this is not just us. And it's not just by us learning with them. It's to support others learning Torah. Now, it could be that now we don't have the means to do so. We don't have the ability to pay for others to do so. It could be we don't even need to. We don't have kids that we're sending to schools. I do, right? But we don't have that need to send to others. We could be working on ourselves. But the second aspect to defeating Amalek within the realm of Torah is to make sure that it's not just about you, that you're allowing for other people to do it as well. Paying for siblings to learn, which I see as a rarity by very few people that are in this world, but it still exists. There are some people that still do it. When you see such a thing and you have the ability to see how there's somebody supporting somebody else, making sure that his sibling, his son, something or other, somebody is taking care of those people, that's an amazing, amazing, amazing level. And it doesn't have to be that much. Just allowing them to learn, giving them the opportunity to learn, and saying to them, convincing them, maybe you should go learn right now. So it's about us. That's the first, the personal idea in which we're being a little bit selfish. It's about us. And then there's the second aspect of allowing other people to get to that idea of what it means for them to have our chavas das, to have a little bit of calmness, serenity, to be able to sit and learn. That's number two. Number three, which I think is true by everybody here. I don't think there's anybody here that doesn't have this ability. But to be able to give over to others what you do know. You may think, well, I can't be a teacher, I can't be a Rebbe, that's gonna take too much out of me. And that might be true, I'm not sure if it's true, but it might be true. But there, without a question, is someone that you can be mashpia on, that you can help out because you know something that he doesn't. Whether that's in our base measures, we have the opportunity with a high school to be able to find a high school kid. We even have a time period allotted for that from 7 to 8. And I'm always looking for guys to tutor other guys. If that's something that you feel you could do when it comes to Gemara, that's amazing. But forget about a Gemara for a second. If you've been to Eretz Yisrael, you know you've learned something over a year. If you know you've been to a yeshiva that has helped you along in some way, shape, or form, whether it's an Eretz Yisrael or here or something like that, but you know you have something, give it over to someone else. Make a chabura. On Thursday night when there's an ability for all the high school kids to come here from Mishmor, say, I want to give a chabura to those kids. Because even if it's 15 minutes and it's on what to you the most obvious thing in the world, other kids might not think it's the most obvious thing in the world. And for you to have that hashpa on a 14-year-old, 15-year-old, even a 16 or 17-year-old bacher, when he's still young, for him to see that a person who doesn't need to learn can just be in college and live the college life of 4 hours a week of classes and 38,000 hours of sleeping and all the other garbage that comes with it, is mekadish his time by taking hours and hours out of his day to learn and daven and to do things which are hard for people to do. If a person sees that, a kid sees that, you have no idea how much of a hashpa you'll have on the rest of his life. And that also defeats Amalek. Because again, there's this selfishness of working on myself. There's the idea of helping out others, either monetarily or physically, helping them out. And then mamish, being a Rebbe, being a teacher, helping out others. You don't want to call it that because you don't feel you're on that level? Fine. Being a mentor or a mashpia, helping out others to get to the level that you're at. And even if you feel that that kid is on his own, that's great. You can always bring another person up. There's always something you can do. And to do that takes, it's such a tremendous schus, such a tremendous schus. Aside from all that, you want the battle to be a real battle against Amalek? I think we all understand this. Then you have to make it into a battle. If you go in by yourself with a weapon, right, and you go into an army against an army of soldiers that are coming against you, obviously you're going to lose. Because as strong as you are and as great as you are, you go up against an entire army, there's no way you're going to succeed. But if you go in together with others, then you have a chance of defeating the other army. They might have more people. There could be thousands, even hundreds of thousands of people on their side. But going in, the more people you have, then exponentially you become that much stronger. So Chazal, this is really from Reb Chaim Shmulevitz. Reb Chaim Shmulevitz asks Rabbi Akiva. He went to yeshiva to learn for 12 years. And then he came back, and we all know what happened, right? His wife said to somebody who came in off the street, "Wow, you let your husband ditch you for 12 years? What is this?" And she said, "If he would go for another 12 years, I would let him go." And Rabbi Akiva turned around, didn't even say hello to his wife, turned around, went for another 12 years. Chaim Shmulevitz asks, every normal person, every sane human being asks, why don't you just walk inside and say hello to your wife? Say, "Hi, I'm back for a few minutes. I'm going to go for another 12 years now, but I'm back just to say hi." Why wouldn't he do that? And Rav Chaim answers, because 12 plus 12 is not 24. 12 plus 12 equals 24 in math. But 12 years of sitting and learning straight with tremendous asmada, plus another 12 years of learning straight with asmada, does not equate to 24 years of learning straight with asmada. And had he stopped, had he caused that type of, I don't know, a hefsik right in between, that would have caused something that made him not the Rebbe Akiva that we know and love. Okay, that's the level the Rebbe Akiva was on. For us, simply put, there's a level of learning together with other people. 1 + 1 + 1 + 1 does not equal 4 people sitting and learning together. You have 4 people, 5 people, 6 people learning in a chabura, in a shir, together, the same limud, the same mesechta. You put those people together, that becomes so much stronger. It becomes a chaticha deroyel ischabe. There's a real piece, something here that is actually, it's chashuv. You have something chashuv here. That's what you have when you add everyone together. It's the purpose of Rameir Shapiro coming out with this idea of Daf Yomi. Bring Klal Yisrael together so that everyone is learning the same Daf. That idea is obviously brilliant. Get everybody to learn, get everybody in there. But it's more than just brilliant. It's the way to defeat Amalek. If you have thousands, tens of thousands of Jews, all learning the exact same Daf, no matter where they are, no matter where they've been, it doesn't make a difference. They're all in the same area. They're learning the same Masechta. They're all Menachos. They're all learning a Daf Ayin. They're all going in the same place. Then yeah, you have an army to go up against Amalek. That's the idea. And that means when you're in yeshiva, you're together with everybody else. Whether it's 5 people fighting, or 10 people fighting, or 15, or you add in a yeshiva that's learning getting together. Everybody getting together, learning the same Masechta, basically on the same Daf. Around the same Daf of Daf Gimel, Daf Dalet, wherever you are, but everybody learning together, that is able to become a strong army of people who are ready to go up against Amalek. That's the power of everyone together. Avram Avinu, in this week's Parsha, toward the end, was on the way to do the Akedah. And there's still a simcha within him. He knows he has a message from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And for some reason, even though a 10-hour trip, which it takes to get from Har Moriah, right, to, I should say, from Hebron, which is where Avraham Avinu was, to Har Moriah, it's maybe a 10-hour trip, maybe. It's a 45-minute car ride. 45-minute car ride with, you know, check stop, you know, checks in between because it's in Arab territory. And maybe a 45-minute, but it's about a 10-hour walk. It took him 3 days. And he's still besimcha. Still besimcha. So what was he doing during those 3 days? He's obviously not walking around in a circle, right? So what's Avraham Avinu doing? He's getting from Hebron, going to Har Moriah, and we have no doubt where Hebron is. We have no doubt where Har Moriah is. We know where Har Moriah is. That's the Makom HaMikdash. We know where Hebron is. We know that's where Maros HaMachpelah is. There's no Shiloh. We know the area that he must have taken. Derech Hebron, which is a street now in Yerushalayim, Derech Hebron was the old-time road to get from one to the other. We know how long it took. I mean, all along it should have taken him. For 3 days, what's happening? Says the Medrash. It's brought down in three different places. The Medrash Rabba brings it down in a different version. There's a Medrash Tanchuma on this that doesn't have many of the details at all. And Otzer Midrashim brings down the entire Medrash. The Otzer Midrashim by Rav Eisenstein says, the Satan came up dressed as an old man, stood in front of Avram Avinu, and he said, can I walk with you? Avram Avinu said, of course. He's walking with Eliezer, Yishmael, Yitzchak. So he's walking, and the old man turns to him and he says, can I ask you, where are you going right now? So Avram Avinu said, we're going to that mountain over there. Somewhere around that area. We're going to go to that area. He said, what are you doing? He said, we're going to bring sacrifices, korbanos, to our God in heaven, to Hashem. To which the old man said, where's your sacrifice? You don't have any animals here. You don't have a sheep. You don't have a goat. You have nothing. What are you sacrificing to Hashem? So Avraham says, oh, when we get there, Kadosh Baruch Hu will show us the korban that we're supposed to bring. Same thing that he said to Yitzchak. Right? So the guy says to him, Satan, the Satan dressed up as this old man, says to him, are you going to sacrifice your son? Isn't that against everything you stand for? Didn't you tell everybody that God does not want people to be sacrificed? Aren't you telling everyone that God is a merciful God who only does great things? You had to wait 100 years to have a child. You finally, at the age of 100 years, you had a child, this child Yitzchak. And 37 years later, when Yitzchak doesn't even have a kid, so you don't even have a grandchild yet, God tells you to take him and sacrifice him? Really? Is that your God? Does that make any sense to you? Avraham Avinu is silent. And Satan says to him, I think you're wrong. I think you're wrong. I think you misheard HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He wants you to bring him up on top of the mountain, but he doesn't want you to actually bring him as a korban. He never meant it that way. And the truth is, Rashi says, that is what it meant. Bahaleyu sham la'ola, bring him up there as an ola, only meant bring him up there, not to actually shecht him. And so the Sultan said to Avraham Avinu, you messed up the nevuah. Avraham Avinu, you don't have experience in nevuahs. You've had a couple in your life, four or five in your life. You don't have enough experience. You messed it up. That's what the old man said to Avraham. And Avraham Avinu was silent, did not say a thing back. And then the Sultan goes up to Yitzchak Avinu. Sees he doesn't get Avram. Avram continues walking. Goes up to Yitzchak and he says, you're going to listen to that old man? You're going to listen to what he has to tell you? Don't you realize he's going to kill you? He's going to sacrifice you. To which Yitzchak said to Avram, you know, where's Ayeha Selaola? He said to his father, where's the Selaola? This man has a good point. Where is the Korban? What are we bringing? And when Avram, you know, answered, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will show us what the Korban is, same thing he answered to the Satan before, Yitzchak, you know, realized it was him. And the Satan said, now you see, it's going to be you. You're going to be the Korban. Are you willing to be a Korban for an old man's fantasy? An old man who's a hypocrite. He's a hypocrite. He thinks he can tell other people what to do, and yet he does the exact opposite? You're going to listen to him, and you're going to sacrifice yourself? You're willing to do that? And Yitzchak Avinu said to the Satan, yes, I'm willing to die, al kiddush Hashem. But he doesn't know what he's talking about, this guy. So Avram doesn't know what he's saying. I'm still willing to sacrifice myself to Hashem. I trust my father as a Navi. He himself, Yitzchak Avinu, never had a Nevuah. He said, I trust my father as a Navi and I'm willing to die. Satan eventually goes away. And we know what happens. Obviously, they put a river in front of him. That's how Avraham Avinu was saved from the river. Then afterward, he goes all the way up. Right? And the Satan knocks the knife out of his hand. He has to get another knife. Whatever. All the things that the Satan does. With Yaakov Avinu, things go a little bit differently. Yaakov Avinu crosses the river Yabok, Nanar Yabok, to go get the Pachim Kitanim that are there, the little jugs. And what does the Satan do? Satan talk to him? Their conversation? A go-be? There's nothing, right? What does the Satan do? Immediately, it's like battle con. Like they're up against each other, grabbing each other's arms, fighting each other until the dawn, kicking up dust. That's what happens. So I don't understand. Why didn't he do that by Avram and Yitzchak? Wouldn't that be an awesome move? Just get Avram in a power move. He's 137 years old. Just grab him by the arms, grab him, and just say, I'm not letting you go anywhere. I'm not letting you go. Say to Yitzchak, don't go anywhere. Fight Yitzchak. He doesn't fight Avram Avinu. He just gives him a claim, and Avram Avinu doesn't listen. Yitzchak Avinu, he says something, and that's that. By Yaakov, he fights him? Why? Why is he fighting him? He should have said, you don't know what you're doing. Esav's really right. You tricked Esav not once, but twice. Esav deserves to be the Bechor. Your selling of the Bechor never really counted in the first place. That's what this Satan should have done. But instead, he fights him. He goes into battle with him. Why? Says Rosh Hashanah Wasserman. This is really brought down by three different Mephorshim. But Rosh Hashanah Wasserman says, it's obvious. Because Avram stood for Chesed, Yitzchak stood for Gevurah, Yaakov stood for Emes, which is Torah. An idea of Tiferes, Racham, and combining everything together, which is what Torah is all about. The Satan is willing to allow you to do anything. You can do anything you want. You want to do Chesed? You want to go do a Chesed wedding? 100%, I'm going to give you carte blanche, do whatever you want to do. Go ahead. You want to go ahead and be a gaver. You want to go up and show everybody this is the right way to be. This is that. You want to scream and shout how everything is the Ikar, how Kadosh Baruch Hu and Emunah. Satan will allow you to. He won't let you learn Torah. Because Satan understands the power that Torah has. And that if a person has the ability to learn, and it's right there in front of them, and the opportunity is raising itself right in front of your face, it's sitting there right in front of you, says the Satan, no way. No way. He'll argue with you about chesed, maybe. He'll argue with you about giving up your life, about being moser nefesh. But in the end, if you want to do it, I'll let you do it. Torah holds him back. Holds him back and fights him to the death to say you're not learning Torah. Because that's what it's like. You'll notice this at all times. When you have a Seder, everything seems to happen during that Seder. I've had it every time. Doctors will tell me the only appointment we have available for you is at a time when you have a set Seder to learn. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? I don't have a choice, right? I want to do it during my break, but I can't. It's during my Seder time. I don't have a choice. The doctor can't do anything about it. So what do? Because the Satan's sitting there and saying, it would never happen during a chesed wedding. If you had a chesed wedding for 8 hours one day, I guarantee you there will never be an issue with the doctor that you have to see during that time. It won't happen. It's not going to happen. You know, another reason, maybe I just don't want to do it. But it'll never happen. It doesn't happen by anything else. It's just by this, because he knows. And you know what that means for us? It means you should treat Torah as Kodesh HaKadoshim. Granted, there's always stuff that needs to be there. But no matter how good your intentions are, just remember, a Seder is a Seder. And we don't get this very often. Again, how often do we have it? So many vacations. Crazy amounts of vacations. The summer, Sukkot, we have a Thanksgiving vacation, which technically is our Hanukkah vacation, but we're not Jewish. And then later on, a winter vacation, then a Pesach vacation, and then a summer vacation again. There's so much time off. How many days do we get to learn during the year? We take those half, 185 days. Let's not, we're not even including Friday and Shabbos. We're already off by 2 days out of a week. So out of 7 days, you only have five. Out of those 5 days, how many weeks out of the year, out of the 52 weeks a year, do we not have vacation? So how many does it go? I don't even want to guess at it, because I'm going to feel so upset afterward and be like, I can't believe we do this. But 40 weeks, 35 weeks, 35 times 5, all together, what are we dealing with? We're dealing with almost 180 days of Seder out of 365 days of the year. We get very, very few. That's where Amalek comes into play. And whether you want to use that for yourself, to help others, or to teach others, nonetheless, using that time is awesome. Reb Chaim Brisker's Rebbe was known as Reb David the Blind. You ever hear this? Reb David the Blind. He was not blind. He was so into his teaching that no matter what went on around him, he couldn't see it. He was just sitting and teaching the entire time. He never stopped. So they called him Reb David the Blind. That's what they called him. So Reb David the Blind was once teaching. It was in Russia, right? To Reb Chaim Brisker and to those around. This is his cheder teacher. It was not like a, you know, we're not talking about a base medrash Rebbe that's all. This is his cheder teacher. First grade, second grade, third grade, whatever it was. And he was sitting and he was teaching Reb Chaim and the other Talmidim. Reb Chaim said that a man came down, whatever the equivalent of the KGB was back then, but a man who definitely did not like learning and did not want anything to do, he started to come down the steps in his big, heavy boots. He's coming down the steps, and all the kids heard it. All the kids knew the Rebbe is in trouble. He's not supposed to be teaching Torah right now. What are we going to do? Comes down the steps. Reb David doesn't stop at all, keeps learning the entire time. The kids are silent. They're shocked. They watch. Obviously, they had their heads, eyes were to the Rebbe. All of a sudden, they saw the guy coming down. mouths open, their eyes staring widely, and Reb David keeps teaching. The man comes right behind Reb David, and all the students, you can see their eyes like go right there, and like with their eyebrows up, knowing that the Rebbe was about to be arrested. What does Reb David do? Turns around, slaps the man in the face, slaps him hard in the face, yells at him, "Get out!" And then continues teaching. The man is so shocked, along with everybody else there, he just gets up, turns around, and walks right out. That's it. So Reb Chaim, I don't know if Reb Chaim did this when he was older, if it was the Beis HaLevi who did this, I don't know who did this, but somebody went up and said, why in the world did you put yourself in sakana like that? You can't put yourself in danger for that? For what? What did you do that for? So Reb David said, I don't understand. I was in the middle of shir, and he was disturbing the kids' learning. What else was I supposed to do? Right there, just think of that thought process. I am not asking you to slap a policeman the next time you see him. I don't want another Trayvon Martin case or Laquan McDonald case. I don't need another one of those, even if you do win billions of dollars for your parents eventually someday. I don't need that. You don't need anything like that. But to think and say, my Seder has to be at least something, I can't take it up to do something else. There might be a class during that time. I can't take that class. There might be something else going on that time. I can't do that for right now. Of course, there are times where you got to take off. Of course. But with the right hadracha, with eitzes, what do you do at that time? Shmuel Berenbaum, we'll say one other story. Shmuel Berenbaum was known for his tremendous asmada. So one time he was walking from his house in Brooklyn to the yeshiva Mir in Brooklyn. So he was walking from one to the other, and he saw a huge billboard. I don't know what this billboard is, but I think the story got it wrong. Okay, I don't know exactly. But they saw a picture of a well-known baseball player eating pasta. My assumption is that it was Derek Jeter eating pizza. I think. I'm not positive, but I'm pretty sure it was something like that. Okay, but he was eating pasta. So he came in, he called all his talmidim over, and he said, I have two auras on the billboard. Number one, he said, just because he plays baseball, does that mean he knows what a good pizza is? That's number one. Doesn't tell me. I'm going to buy it because he likes it. Maybe he has horrible taste. I would assume he has horrible taste. That's number one. Number two, how in the world does someone who doesn't learn Torah have any clue what Hanah is in Olam Hazeh? How in the world is he supposed to know? You think his taste buds work? He doesn't know what taste buds are because he isn't learning. See, I get that. To be able to sit there and say, you look around and you say, what is life worth if you don't know what you're doing with it? Like, is life all about sitting in a Geno's East and eating a pizza? Is it about, like, a Giordano's, just sitting down and having a totally not kosher slice of pizza? For a second, I'm sure that tastes absolutely amazing. And then what? And then what's your life about? Is your life about eating that pizza? You gotta feel bad. I was listening on the radio just now before I had to go grab something. I came back and I was listening to them talk about clam, not clam chowder, because then I would say chowder, and I would go, it's like the clam stuff that you use to be able to dip in stuff, and they were talking about how good it is that you have this and that and the other. I'm like, seriously, do you have nothing else to talk about? There's nothing else going on in the world that we're talking about clams? I don't even understand what that means. This is the way for us to defeat Amalek. Amalek is all about finding those little minor things and trying to destroy you from within it. And our job is to sit there and realize that that's not the ikkar. Something else is. To take something else inside there. So this is our third shir that has to do with this idea. And next week, what we're going to do is, now that we understand that there's this idea that we have to fight Amalek, we are going to fight him. We're going to do it in Es Samach David Avdecha. We're going to do it by learning, and not only by learning, but also by teaching. Now that we came to this, now what happens when we're getting ourselves ready for Mashiach? And next week, we'll talk about what that idea is to get ourselves ready. Now that Amalek is, so to speak, gone, what do we do in readying ourselves for the next level of Mashiach? Have a good week, everyone.